This is Hutchins Podcast.
We are now joined with Miss Anna Davidson, teacher librarian in the junior school. How are you today?
Thank you for having me on, Josh. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I guess you are one of the facilitators in the Singapore study tour. I guess, could you tell us a little bit about your background when it comes to international travel and how you got involved in this study tour?
Sure. Well, I grew up traveling a lot with my family, which I'm very grateful for that experience. When I finished year 12, I spent a year living in England on a gap year. And then as a teacher, there's lots of opportunities for travel. So I've lived and worked in China and Canada. At my last school in Melbourne, I was part of a World Challenge trip to India. And that's where I really enjoyed being with working with teenagers, being a primary school teacher. That was quite different for me. And when I saw Mr. Ma had sent out an expressions of interest for the Singapore study tour, I thought, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. And I had an interview with Mr. Ma and Mrs. Fraser at the end of last year. And next thing you knew, we were on the trip.
Oh, wow. There was an interview process, was there?
There was an interview process.
Oh, gosh. That sounds scary.
It was a fairly simple interview, though.
Was it? Okay.
More of a conversation.
I see. So very relaxed. I guess one of the questions that a lot of people would be asking when they're thinking about this study tour, what was, I guess, the purpose of this tour and what were some of the key objectives you had for the group?
Sure. Well, I came on board a little bit later in the piece.
Yes.
So Mr. Ma had done a lot of the initial planning.
Yeah.
But I guess there were three educational reasons why we chose Singapore. First was it's a great opportunity for students to experience an Asian community and Asian culture. Lots of the students on the trip are studying Mandarin, so they were able to practice their Mandarin with local people. Mm. We also wanted to continue building a relationship with the Hua Chong school while we were there. But there were also other experiences like personal development, you know, encouraging students to make the most of these experiences. There were opportunities for students to reflect on the learning, both cultural and personal, throughout the trip.
I picked up there building the relations with Hua Chong. I'm guessing you've probably never heard of that school prior to going to Singapore.
No, I hadn't. So it was really exciting to be able to visit the school and see how schools in Singapore operate and the similarities and differences between Hutchins and Hua Chong.
I know we talked about this. I myself and Archie did go on the Singapore study tour trip with you, and I think you must have mentioned that the teachers had a little bit of a different experience to the students. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. Would you be able to very quickly elaborate on that maybe?
Sure. I think we all went into the school day experience with some perhaps stereotypical ideas
yes.
about what Singaporean school might look like. So for a little bit of context for the listeners, Mr. Ma and I spent the day with some teachers visiting different classrooms and observing the teaching, whereas the Hutchins students actually were buddied up with students and participated in the lessons as a student. So it was very interesting for us to see the very impressive grounds
yes.
and just the way the teaching and learning happened in that school.
I think there's more to come specifically with Hua Chong later in this episode. I guess now talking about experiences and memories, what were some of the most memorable experiences and what were some insights that you gained from the tour?
Sure. So I'd never been to Singapore before. I've travelled to a lot of Asian countries, but not Singapore. So for me, food is always a memorable experience of any travel, and that was no different here. And I think we've got some guests coming on to talk to you about the food experiences that we had. I loved the different quarters that were present in Singapore. So it's a real melting pot of cultures, which was exciting to immerse ourselves in that. And from a social perspective, one of the highlights for me was seeing our group of students in the lead up sitting in, when we had team meetings, sitting in very separate friendship groups or year level groups, and then throughout the experience really coming together and lots of friendships developing.
Definitely. Now, I guess when it comes to Singapore, it's an international tour, you know, with the school, no parents, things like that. How did group members respond to cultural differences when they were in unfamiliar surroundings, I guess?
Well, Mr. Maher and I were very, very proud of the group because right from the moment we got off the plane, we found that everybody in the group was open-minded, they were curious, they were really engaged in all the experiences, trying lots of different foods. No one stuck to safe choices. You know, I think Will T took the prize for that right on day one, ordering fish head soup. So we were very proud of the group for doing that, and the way that there was a lot of free time given to group members and that everybody really used that time wisely to immerse themselves in the culture.
Free time, I guess, is a thing that students, I think, really looked forward to, and probably free time was the thing that probably teachers maybe most dreaded, I'm guessing. For people that didn't go on the trip and that want to know more, could you briefly sort of explain the rules and regulations, I guess, behind the free time?
Sure, sure. So students were very keen to get out and explore Singapore, and teachers, obviously, were in charge of the safety of the group. So we did have some group guidelines in place to make sure that people were staying safe. So on the first day of the tour, we had an overview of the whole city with our beautiful tour guide, Natalie, and that gave everybody a bit of a sense of the lay of the land and using MRT and things like that. And then after that, there was a little bit of free time every day. And so our big rules during that time were to stay in a group of three, and we had a group WhatsApp chat where each small group would update the teachers on where they were going. You know, so Mr. Maher and I really enjoyed getting messages saying, oh, these three students, we're jumping on the MRT, we're heading over to the F1 track now, or, oh, we're on our way to Chinatown now. So, and we were very pleased with the way the group really respected those rules, and it made us very trusting in offering more and more free time as the trip went on.
Out of curiosity, what did the staff do during the free time? Did you guys do your own things? Did you guys even break off?
No, so sometimes Mr. Maher and I had big chat. We solved all the problems of the world over cups of tea and coffee. But we also, I think Mr. Maher went off a few times with Natalie to explore some cultural things.
Yeah.
You know, we did a little bit of wandering around Chinatown as well. So we had a little bit of free time as well, and I think we both did a little bit of work during that time as well.
I'm not after spilling all of the, gossip and behind the scenes of the trips, but just for people that may be wondering, were there any sort of serious issues that may have arisen during the trip?
No, we were. I mean, that's obviously something that you worry about as a teacher, taking a group of students to an international city. But we didn't have any major challenges. I think the only major one probably was at the start of the trip, students managing themselves in the heat.
Yeah.
So I think we all got a shock when we got off the plane. So, but people quickly learnt that they needed to stay hydrated and. And duck in and out of the air conditioning throughout the trip. So thankfully there were no major challenges.
And I think what you touched on there, personal management, there is more to come on that with, I think, Tom and Ruben and Titus. I think later on, and there's some good stories embedded in there, but I think one of the key takeaways for the group would definitely be personal management, and specifically because we're in Singapore in the heat, that was a major struggle, I guess. It's not your first time being a group leader for an international tour like this, is that right, sorry?
No, so I've been on a couple of trips with a previous school. So I participated in a trip to the Northern Territory. So four years in a row I participated on that trip.
Oh, wow.
But I also spent a month in India with some senior school students with a World Challenge trip as well.
I see. So, what advice, sorry, would you give for staff in leading a study tour like this?
Sure. Well, I think throwing your hat in the ring and giving it a go is a great starting point. It's a fantastic opportunity to get to know a group of students and also to engage in exploring a new culture. So for me, it's really nice as a primary school teacher to spend time with teenagers. And I feel like now the Singapore group, I have a lovely connection with those students, and I'm already tapping them on the shoulder to come and spend some time participating in junior school events as well, which is great. It's a great opportunity to get to know a group of students in a different light. In terms of advice when you're on the trip, I would suggest regular team meetings before the trip starts and also during the trip. It's a great way for students to bond together and spend time focusing on the learning of the trip as well.
Was that something that you and Mr. Ma had pre-planned before leaving, or was that sort of just roll with the punches?
It was a bit of both. I think you probably noticed, Josh, that we did roll with the punches a little bit the trip. There was a lot of quick discussions about what was going to happen next. Mm. But we definitely planned to have regular team meetings and an evening reflection period each day to think about the things that had happened during the day. So a bit of both.
I also really want to quickly touch, because it's only just come to me, the roles of student leaders, how did that come about, and I guess how were responsibilities given and things like that?
Yeah, so that was something that I'd experienced on the previous World Challenge trip I'd been on, and I'd said the power of having student leaders, giving students the opportunity to be in charge of managing the group for the day. So that, again, was something sort of done on the fly with Mr. Ma and I. Each room had an opportunity to be the leaders for the day, which meant meeting with the staff leaders, briefing the students for the next day, mapping out MRT routes, you know, working out where we were going for dinner, communicating with people through the WhatsApp group. So it's just another opportunity, I guess, for students to have that leadership experience.
I guess finally, we're almost out of time here. What are some of the key takeaways that you hope participants will remember from this trip?
I think the appreciation of a different culture. I think Singapore is a fantastic place to visit in your first step into Asian culture, because there's so many different cultures within the one city. I hope that the students that were on our trip are enjoying the new friendships that they've developed throughout the trip. And also I think everybody, and we spent a bit of time reflecting on this during the trip, is about developing skills for independent travel. I'm very passionate about people traveling the world, and I think this is a great opportunity for students to have an experience of independent travel in a supported environment.
Well, thank you so much, Miss Davidson, teacher librarian in the junior school and, of course, one of the leaders for the Singapore Study Tour. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me, Josh.
And we are now joined here by Will T and Josh Bodycote. And what story would you guys like to share with us today?
Well, for us today, we are talking about the Singapore trip and more specifically Universal Studios, which is a great highlight of our trip. A few boys selected to go.
Yes.
And paid for their tickets to go to Universal Studios. Most of them correctly, unlike one person in particular.
Yeah, we'll hear about that.
We'll
later.
Hear about that soon.
We'll hear about that soon.
What was the highlight of that day? What do you remember most?
I remember most probably the roller coasters with you and your experience
with Josh specifically.
Yes, with Joshua specifically. First time at a theme park.
Yeah.
First time on roller coasters, and I was very impressed.
Yeah,
it was great. Overall, it was really good. It was incredible park. It's really good. They've set it out really well, and the theming is excellent. The rides, they were great. I'll give them that. Very twisty, turny, upside down ones. A lot of unexpected ones, including there was one Egyptian themed.
That was the best one.
Did you like that one, Will?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Very unexpected. We had no idea going into the ride what we were waiting for. And we've been told it was good.
And I seem to remember lots of screaming from Josh of the cart.
Well, that one was weird only because you couldn't see most of the time. You were in like pure darkness.
It was inside a hall and you had no idea where you were, what you were doing, but you just knew you were going fast and that was...
And going backwards.
And going backwards.
What was the best ride in your opinion, Will?
So the first one would probably be, I think it was called the Cyclone.
Yep.
And that was the first one I went on. it had a 360. So I went upside down.
Yep.
Some of it went fast and
And the second one?
And the second one would be Shrek 4D. I went on it by myself. It was just the it was sort of a relaxing ride.
Relaxing?
We were just, well, it was just me, but there was obviously other people on it. But
no, it was just you, Will, just riding along.
Just me alone. So we were sat in a theater and we had like 40 glasses and we would just watch the screen and then the seat would move to the to what the screen was
really
showing.
Cool.
That's weird almost.
Because none of the other three of us went to that. We were like, I don't know, running around trying to sort stuff out.
Well, I guess JV, Archie and I, we were in a sort of a three and sort of moved throughout the day. I distinctly remember that Josh B took a bit of an L for the team in the Jurassic water park. And I think we must have been coming down the slide, I think.
Yeah.
And you just got pummeled.
Yeah. So the Jurassic Park water ride, so rapids ride. I don't know if I like rapids rides anymore after that experience, but the theming was great for that. It was very entertaining. But obviously going through the rapids and everything, and I seem to be the unlucky one, getting wet probably on about 50%. So my right side was soaked and my left side was completely dry.
Yeah.
So, and I was very wet for the most of the day.
And to describe that ride, so you sort of like went around these rapids and it was all very, very flat with no elevation changes. Mm,
yes.
And at the very end, there was this really, really cool elevator. So you like took your whole inner tube basically with six people on it, whatever, the whole inner tube into this room and then the floor would come up and just like lift you up and you came out of the elevator and straight down this massive slide.
That was the thing. I remember being so underwhelmed for about 75% of the ride.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so boring.
Yeah.
Until out of nowhere, we just like went in this lift and then fell from the ground, fell from the sky.
And Josh got soaked.
Yeah. That was also unexpected. And but yeah, it was great. Other than getting wet.
How did you go with the heat, Will? Particularly, I found we did a bit of running in the park, only because we were a bit, like, mad. But how was the heat?
Well, I also got drenched. Jurassic Park ride. So, you know, I was wet.
Yeah.
So that
helped.
Helped cool
in the,
me
in
down.
The cooling process, yeah.
And for context, we realised that the three of us realized we were on the opposite side of the park, tried to get into this line, realized we couldn't just have the barcodes on our phones to let them let us in. Yeah. So we decided, oh, we better go around to like the visitor's desk to like have them sort it out.
Yeah.
And it's probably like, I don't know, 10-minute walk there and back.
Yeah.
And look, we weren't there wasting 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
No, we were on the
jog. We were there for business.
Yeah. We were on the jog and we ended up at the Jurassic Park ride absolutely soaked.
Yeah.
In sweat.
The thing, and I think Archie just touched on it there essentially, we bought the express passes. You bought one as well, didn't you, Will? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we all had express passes, but I thought that having an express pass would mean that I would jump in the line and essentially be on the ride within maybe 30 seconds. But I was kind of misled. At least their marketing department fulfilled their role and I was still in line for probably 15 minutes. Was that annoying? Do we agree with that?
Well, the thing is, if you're going to have the on the ride in 30 seconds, they're going to have to make that more expensive because at the moment for the people waiting for 15 minutes, it's at a price where 15 minutes worth of waiting, people can like afford to go pay it. But if you end up with 30 seconds worth of waiting, it's going to have to be like 10 times more expensive.
Yeah.
Because then only 15 seconds worth of ride are going to be afford to pay it. So sort of a swings and roundabout sort of situation.
I was just talking to Miss Davidson about this, Will. You were very, adventurous. Actually, it's quite funny. Both of you are really good at this. You were really adventurous, Will. And JV, you were all right. You were all right. You had some interesting fish and chips. But anyway, that wasn't my point. You were very adventurous when it came to your eating, Will.
Yeah.
What was some of your highlight dishes?
Probably the fish head soup.
That's the one we were talking about.
And I had an oyster omelette. Can't think of anything else, but I remember just having plenty of different dishes.
Was it you that had chicken feet?
That was Goldspink.
No,
Goldspink had
me.
Them out of a can, which was gross. And then Ruben had them cooked properly.
Ruben
and they were nice.
Yeah. Now, were all of them pretty good or?
No, I liked all of my.
You liked all of them?
All of them, yeah. Mm.
And I'm guessing that's typically stuff you wouldn't have back home.
No, don't have
it. What we were there for.
Was that a conscious decision? You thought when you arrived in Singapore, I'm going to try all those new foods, or was it sort of just like, that looks cool, I'm going to try that?
Yeah, it wasn't really conscious. I just, once I got to the hawker centers or whatever food courts, I just decided, yeah, this looks cool.
Yeah.
I'll try it.
That's the best attitude, I think, out of everyone in the whole group. That It was amazing to watch that. Now, how are the hawker centers for you, JV?
Interesting, because I don't, well, if you don't know my past, I'm a bit of a fussy eater. And
to say the least.
And my type of food is Western food. So going into Singapore is obviously different, and there's not, and especially on this type of trip, we tried to focus away from Western food as much as possible. And that was a challenge. But when you started to really get into it, especially the hawker centers and trying a lot of the new foods there, it was definitely an experience. And I do like my meat products. And a good thing is with Singapore is they do have a lot of chicken meat and a lot of those type of foods. And so that was really helpful, especially.
Yeah.
But though I coped better than I thought I would.
You did originally. A lot better than what I thought.
Yeah.
If I'm being brutally honest.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, and the food was actually quite good. And it was definitely more authentic than something you would get at home as well, obviously, with the hawker centers. And you got its dishes and traditions that have been passed down compared to your local supermarket food. And it's just, it's on another level and it's really, really good.
Thank you so much for coming on, guys. We'll roll on to our next interview now.
We are now joined with Ruben and Titus, who are here to talk to us about life's lessons, I guess, that you guys or everybody learned in the Singapore trip. I guess the first question that I have at least written down on my sheet of paper here is the milk carton story. For anyone that doesn't know, which is probably everybody that's listening, what is the milk carton story?
Right. So on day one, Ruben and I walked into a shop and we found this entertaining milk carton shaped drink bottle.
Mm.
Ruben bought it impulsively, obviously.
It was a good drink bottle.
It was an extremely good drink bottle, and it was very, had a lot of capacity. Anyway.
It's just beside the point.
So anyway, he filled it up and then we're later in the mall and we're browsing the stuff in Louis Vuitton for some reason. And someone dropped a mannequin. So everyone was kind of staring at our general vicinity. And then about 2 seconds later, Ruben somehow managed to drop the drink bottle on the floor. So then for maybe 20 minutes after that, we were walking around this big shopping mall with a leaky drink bottle. It had a crackle of the wall through the side.
Spilling half the water on the carpet in Louis Vuitton was a bit stressful.
What did the staff say?
Nothing, because we got out there quick enough. We just left.
I see, gotcha. Wow. It's not made out of, it's made out of plastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not glass.
It was very thin plastic.
Okay.
Like I dropped it on some carpet, like some like carpet, not too, a bit hard, but it just broke instantly, snapped right down.
Yeah, I see, gotcha. Where did you buy it?
Daiso, like some like Japanese store over there.
It's basically like the reject shop.
Yeah, the reject shop
where you buy everything that's like really cheap. But you can buy absolutely everything.
But it's good at least.
Although, mind you, these drink bottles weren't exactly cheap by.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
No.
That was like $10,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Singaporean?
Yeah.
No, it was $10.
Yeah, $10.
No, that was
$10
a
Australian.
Small one. The large one was like 18.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Could you go bigger?
There was a smaller one, half litre, and there was a litre one, which is all I got. Yeah.
Oh, so there wasn't
bigger. Why go half size when you can go full
size? Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that I guess is. It was a big thing, and I think Archie was the manager of it, is the Gronk Award. Explain what is.
Right. So by about day three, the count of stupid things that we'd collectively done was going up a lot. So
yes.
I suggested the idea that we keep count of them. And then Archie went ahead and actually started managing. So if anyone did anything stupid of any sort, you could ping the WhatsApp group. And then Archie would give a tally and with a brief description of the act.
The deed.
I reckon the first one would probably be when Tom purchased the ticket for the wrong day for Universal Studios.
This was the inspiration for the Gronk Award. So we were all going to Universal Studios, and mind you, the tickets are not cheap. They're probably like
$100.
$100. More. $100. $100.
And so we're Singaporean, which is more in Australia.
And so we were like chatting, talking in the lobby, and Ricky was like, this is Tom Wilkinson. He was like, oh, I need to go buy my ticket. So he put out his phone, bought the ticket, blah, 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 blah. And then when he confirmed the payment, got his ticket, realized, oh, this says the 12th. We're going on the 13th. And so then he bought the ticket for the wrong day. And that was, and we were like, it's a very stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't really expect anything less of him, did we?
Oh, well, it's not very nice to imply that he would purposely buy a ticket on the wrong day.
Other thing, who actually won the Gronk Award?
Oh, it was Bricky.
Yeah, it was.
By a long way.
Do we know the number, the actual number of points? Archie can pull it up for us, hopefully.
All righty, so we had Bricky on 6, beating Josh Wise by 2 stupid things, who had 4.
How did I have 4?
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to work out.
Well, you did like...
I remember flooding a toilet and that was it.
And mind you, there were a lot dealt out for navigational misadventures.
Oh, yeah, of course. Poor Ruben might have copped a few of them.
I tried to get a short one or two myself. Oh, and the one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
The broken milk bottle.
Oh, of course.
Was given to Bricky as the trophy for the greatest Gronk of the trip.
Yes, we have to get that engraved.
Yeah, we are. Yes.
You've been saying that for a very long time by this point.
Yeah, probably too long.
Yeah, we will. It will become tradition for the next Singapore trip.
No, next all international trips, just hand on to the next winner.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much, guys. Let's roll on to the next interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now joined with Sebastian Stagg, one of the obviously fellow group members that came to Singapore. How are you today, Seb?
I am fantastic. A little bit under the weather, but doing okay.
That's good. Well, that's not good that you're under the weather, but you get my point.
Good that you're still fantastic.
It's good that you're here. That's the main thing. So, food experiences and I guess culture. You're our culture guy, I think, for this.
Okay.
For our section. Sorry. What was the hawker experience like as a whole, I guess?
The hawker experience as a whole. I mean, such an intangible part of, I think, Singaporean culture. And I think it's actually UNESCO protected as such.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Intangible cultural heritage.
Wow.
And it's just such a specific sort of vibe and an energy, because everybody is there and they're just having their own little, what are they called? Tableaus of conversations.
Yeah,
and
I see.
Everybody's chatting. They're just getting all of these small things. And then you see the vendors. So fantastic at what they do, because just day in, day out, they are just doing this exact same dish, and it's so good. And it's really amazing as well. Coming from Australia, where a lot of people think that food is very overpriced. And then in Singapore, just even in the time that we were there, my perception of what was overpriced just totally switched around because it was instead of saying, oh, $12 for this meal or a snack, that's overpriced. But in Singapore, it was $2? No, too much.
Too much.
I'm turning away.
I guess where I wanted to go next was, how much would a standard meal, a dinner meal, would you say would that cost Singaporean?
If you were buying smart and not going to I don't know. There were certain
tourist traps.
Yes, exactly. You were
which
a victim.
I fell.
You were a victim, Josh, of the tourist trap vendors. But I think average, it was maybe six or seven Singaporean dollars.
Yeah.
Not much at all.
Oh,
which is
for context here, it's 1.1. So Singaporean dollars is $6.50 Australian.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. You could never get that in
Absolutely.
Australia.
Yeah. And I was at the end of the trip, I was like, oh, $10? Nah, it's way too much.
Yeah, literally.
Well, I remembered that we came back. It must have been into the airport, and airports already have high prices as they are. But I remember I wanted to have yogurt, I think, just because I was so starved from the flight. And a strawberry yogurt, $10.
What? $10?
What is this?
Oh, God.
I was desperate at this point, but I was this is not on. I will not take this. So that was...
No. I absolutely agree. It was just amazing how cheap everything was. Like we had our tour guide, Natalie, she would give us a dinner fund occasionally. And like you could buy so much. You could buy like enough for your whole table with what she gave you.
Well, she was, I think, very generous, which was very nice of her.
Yeah,
very generous.
What was your favorite meal? It's probably quite favorite hard to pin meal. Down.
Either the yumcha that we had, which I think I'm going to talk about in a bit.
You
can
talk about it now if you like.
Well, maybe I'll segue. Exactly. Perfect segue.
There we go.
So on the day that most people went to the Universal Studios, there were, I think, six of us who did not want to go to Universal Studios. And we instead chose to have a, I think Mr. Ma labeled it as like a self-directed cultural experience, which was really, really fantastic because we just got to like go off the beaten path. Well, as off the beaten path as you can get in a, you know, metropolis that is Singapore. And we went to this like really old apartment building. And like on the seventh or eighth floor, there was this huge, huge yumcha restaurant.
Yeah.
And nobody spoke English in there. Apart from like to say, you know, you want this or how much is this or whatever. Apart from that, we were basically flying by the seat of our pants, you know, occasional Chinese interjections, but it was just, I think the cultural experience and the language immersion of that made it my favorite meal in accompaniment with like, you know, fantastic, like authentic, I think it was Chinese cuisine.
Yeah.
Like really, really authentic, like fresh made.
Yeah.
And that in tandem with like, we didn't see a single Caucasian person on that whole trip where we went out to, where we went out to that restaurant, like traveling to and from whatever. No one. So we felt like we were the odd very ones out. Authentic.
Yeah.
But that was definitely, I think that was my favorite meal.
Yeah. How did you go then with like ordering and things like that? I'd like you'd learn Chinese, so I'm assuming that was a bit of a safety net when it came to ordering, I guess.
Yeah, it was helpful to have the Chinese as sort of like a last resort because we knew that it wasn't going to be completely like not
functional.
That it wouldn't. Yeah, exactly. Just it wouldn't have been particularly well suited, and they also were speaking, I think, mostly Cantonese.
Oh, okay.
But it went okay ordering. Well, it went okay for the yumcha restaurant because they just brought around this cart of food and just kept on giving us things.
Oh.
And then afterwards asking us if we wanted it or not, but it was already on the table. And we walked in. That was the very first thing that happened was this the waiter came around with this big yumcha trolley and she just like loaded all of this stuff onto our table and we had no idea what the process was, if this was her showing us like, here, this is what we have to offer.
Yeah.
But no, we were expected to pay for all of those dishes. Yeah. And we had no idea how that was supposed to work. So that was a bit intimidating. But after that, we started using our Chinese a bit more to like help us out. And it was okay. It wasn't too bad with the ordering.
Now, Mr. Ma is a big one. Like he's our Chinese teacher. He's a big one for the local immersion. How was that for you? As probably one of Hutchins's most skilled linguists, I'd say.
Thank you. I don't know about that. So that day was for me. That was the cultural experience day.
Yeah.
Because you know, apart from that, it was very sterile in terms of cultural experience because it was museums or it was guided tours or walks. Yeah. And that wasn't really, it was beneficial, but beneficial in the same way that learning from a textbook is different from doing something in practice.
Yeah.
And
can I add in something here as well? Like, of course I didn't come, Josh and I both went to Universal Studios and we didn't go to your yumcha day, but I felt something very, very similar in the morning that I went out with Cliff and Charlie too. We went out to we rode the MRT to the end of the line.
Yep.
And we went out to basically the northwest part of the island, and we looked at where people actually live, and we caught this awesome light rail around. It was basically a monorail, but like instead of a monorail, it was a bus.
Yeah.
It was basically a bus on an elevated track. And so it got connected to the ground through this like runner where it got its power from. But then it ran, instead of rails, it had just wheels.
Oh.
And it was really, really, really cool.
Oh.
And wow. Honestly, that's from where one of my favorite photos of the trip came from, looking over this street with just these miles and miles of just tall high-rise buildings yeah. where like everyone in Singapore lives. And like we walked past this market looked really cool.
Yeah.
We didn't go there because we would have been late and like we would have got destroyed if yeah. we were late. But like, but this market looked amazing. So all of this market, then it's just like, it was just really, really, really cool just to walk around and be on this train where like all of these people who are like going to work on and Cliff, Charlie and I were standing there like, oh, we feel so out of place here. But it felt so awkward, but it was yeah. just the most amazing experience.
Talking about cultural or real authentic cultural experiences, Hua Chong was, yes. I guess, a real yep. immersion day for everybody.
Absolutely.
And everybody had different takeaways, I guess. What was the experience like for you personally?
I think the teenage school experience is basically universal at this point.
Yes.
But
yeah.
at the same time, it was really interesting to be immersed in a culture that is stereotyped for being completely devoutly studious
Definitely. And
constantly, you know, being the model student. And we found that wasn't really the case.
No,
they were, not at all. You know, they were very rowdy. And if you took aside the fact that this was the best scoring school in the country, then it just, you wouldn't have known.
No.
Because it was completely like every other high school in that they, most of the time they weren't paying attention. They were, you know, like, well, not to say that there weren't select few that were.
But yeah.
I don't want them to hear this. And
no. We're not bagging out Hua Chong here.
No.
A lot of the people in my class, especially, were.
Yeah.
Nah.
No, exactly.
But like, I feel like that's part of the experience of being like all everyone there is so smart. Like everyone there is smarter than everyone is.
100%.
Like, and they're like 2 years younger than us. Yeah. Like, so that everyone there is so smart, but you'd never even notice it.
Yeah.
It's almost a product of being that smart that they can afford that. Like, they all work so hard outside of school.
Yep.
Like, they'd all finish school, then have a tutor till 8:30, then go play badminton. And they'd all be working so hard. So almost school is just like their break with their friends.
Yes.
And so they see school in a sort of different way. So school isn't where all the work gets done. School is where you talk with all your friends.
School is a social part.
And then have the third exposure to what you're learning because you've learned it 3 weeks beforehand because you're studying the syllabus.
Exactly. Mm. No, that was just really interesting for me, that aspect of how they treated school so much differently than we do.
Yeah.
And another aspect,
and even from
sorry,
and how the whole country treats schooling is very, very different.
Yes,
because the whole country's schooling system is so different.
Yes,
and the government, there's no real true private schools.
Yep.
So the government just allocates funds out of this big schooling fund where they allocate money to every single school in the country, but depending on the school's like average scores from the past year, so schools who score higher get more money. And so if you have a really, really high scoring school like Hua Chong, or they get a lot of money from the government to fund their facilities, basically.
Yeah.
And then, so then how this is works out as sort of equitable-ish is that at the end of grade six, or what we would call grade six, they call it, I don't know, whatever they call it.
I know.
So at the end of grade six, every single student in the country does a test.
Yeah.
They do a test a bit like the year 11, 12 task exams for us.
Yeah.
So they do a test and that ends up ranking all the students in a percentile sort of way. So like you have the smartest kids up here and then like the less smart ones in the middle and then the other people down there.
The other people?
Oh, the less smart people.
Yes.
Like, and so then the people who scored the best in that exam get offered places at these extremely high scoring schools which have the best facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a really an interesting take because for us, you know, the quality of your facilities and in some cases, the quality of your education as a whole is dependent on your willingness to pay school fees.
Yeah.
But over there, because the government does that subsidizing system, I think it's fantastic because it allows the best students to have the best facilities.
Yeah, and it almost allows the people who like, aren't interested or are disinterested, they're sort of not, in inverted commas, wasting facilities or wasting spaces in, like, it's not wasting, but like they're not taking full advantage, they're not taking the full opportunity they're given.
Yes, 100%. And I think that's a big problem with the Australian and I think Western.
Yeah.
Private school system is that there are people that don't care, but their, you know, whoever is paying for their school fees wants them to have access to it, but they.
But they're not taking full advantage of
the,
I guess, opportunities.
And, you know, they're allowed to. Maybe whatever they're studying isn't what they want to do, but there are other people that would want to, but they can't afford the school fees. But
they can't get there. Yeah.
It's just a very interesting sort of cultural note in how.
Yes.
In how Singapore views education and how it sees sort of people as, it's I just see everything differently. Like it's a very different model and different cultural vision on society.
Yeah,
yeah.
Are you still in contact with your Hua Chung buddy?
I am.
Yes, we are.
We follow each other on Instagram. He's very active. I was surprised.
Yeah, I noticed that they're very active on social.
So
yeah,
always posting during school time.
But not so much during maybe their study time.
You guys had amazing buddies. I haven't talked to my buddy since.
Our buddy he was really fantastic because, well, there were two of them. One of them was maybe a bit shyer. And then the other one was just really, really, well, they were both fantastic, but the other one really made a huge effort to make us feel included and he explained everything.
Yeah.
And I think that was almost the most valuable part of that day was, you know, meeting this person and having them explain a system that is, for the most part, very different to the Australian system.
Yeah.
And just to be able to keep contact with him, it was fantastic.
I remember when I was with my partner, Lucas, I think, and it must have been Josh B, who we had on a second ago. He was actually really good. He was, you know, explaining the system like we've just been, you know, talking about just then. But I think the thing that I guess hit home to me was that, like, they're in a different country. Sure, they're in a different system. Sure, they work a bit harder, whatever. But they're still like us, you know. They've still got all their, you know, crazy friends doing X, Y, Z, and, you know, they're doing, you know, their extracurricular activities and their, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Their social life is just completely the same as us. And it's it was almost like, it's the same. There's no difference.
I've found it really, really admirable how well they managed themselves outside of school
because
it was completely out of their own self-discipline that they kept up these fantastic grades and these fantastic study habits. I found that really fantastic.
Fell on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Not having, you know, parents coming to, I'm sure there could be an element of that, but you know, here back in Western culture, maybe it's a bit more free roam, maybe.
A little bit. I think so, yeah.
I'm not saying that it is be all end all, but I don't need to speak for other people, but you get my point.
Absolutely, yeah.
The thing, and I know we're running out of time here quickly, the thing that I took away, I guess, is a major insight into Singapore culture, as we're sort of on the topic of immersion and yada yada, the HDB or the housing, call it? Housing and Development Board.
I loved that.
It was
so
amazing.
So much.
Yeah, that really was fascinating.
Honestly, my highlight of the trip, I know we're going to get around to asking these questions, my highlight of the trip was going to the end of that line and seeing where people actually live and seeing how the Singapore country works in giving, making sure that everyone has access to a home. There's all of these rules about the HDB. So there's basically like, if you're a Singaporean citizen, you can get this. So essentially the government is subsidizing the new build of homes.
Yep.
Mm. And so if you go to the government and say, I want this, and the government goes, sure, where would you like it? And I go, I'd like you to build it here for me. Then you go pay for it, and then the government goes, builds it. Then you own the home.
Yeah.
Own is sort of ish. Own a 99-year lease of the home.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then there's a contract saying because the government subsidized building of that apartment, there's some contracts saying, you can't sell it for 5 years, you have to live in it, you can only own one. So it sort of takes away the it's almost sort of it almost sort of like changes the relationship between a home and an investment sort of
yes
place. And so 100%. Like a house is where you live, but it's not something you buy to make money off of. You're buying it to live in, you're not buying it to sell it on later and make more money.
Yeah, it sort of removes, it's loopholes isn't the right word, but it removes that, it's something where you live in and that's sort of, you're sort of contractually bound by that.
More straightforward in that sense, I think.
Yeah.
And it was pretty awesome that we could just like go to these like showrooms that's put on by the HDB, see all the different options.
It's basically like an IKEA. It was really
It's IKEA for homes, like home edition
like,
almost.
We're in this big like room and like, oh yep, walk into, oh yep, this is someone, this is you could live here.
Yeah.
And then, oh, you could live here. It's like, I was like, this is IKEA.
Yes. it's insane. And almost, I think it must have been back on the ground floor when we were done seeing it or before whenever.
Yeah.
They have their vision for what they want HDB housing to look like. And it's just, it's almost like a city within a city almost. It's sort of this massive suburb thing. And it's, you know, there's a school here, there's houses here, and there's a shop here.
And that's what
it's a cut, copy, paste.
And that's what I love so much about the Singapore design philosophy is that everything that you need is very close to where you live.
Yeah.
And realistically, like, yeah, sure, it's like all the Apple Store and all of the Louis Vuitton in the city center.
Yeah, it's all the touristy stuff.
But like, really, like if you lived in Singapore and you worked in the area around where you lived, there would be no reason to leave.
No.
Like there's the hospital, there's the shopping center, there's the gym, there's the pool, there's the school, there's all of these other things within extremely close distance from where you live.
Mm.
And it honestly just makes Singapore like a very easy place to live.
Yes.
And it makes it very, like, very easy.
It's almost like perfect.
It really made it fascinating to learn about just because that is the central ethos, I think, of what they are envisioning. Like they had these huge, you know, whatever scale it was, models of these suburbs.
Mm. Yeah.
And everything was planned out. And just having that efficiency and access is that central part of it. It was really interesting.
How our attention, I guess, was captured into HDB is all thanks to our amazing guide, Natalie.
Yeah.
And that she would just, we sit there for like half an hour, 45 minutes? And we're just talking about HDB and all the things that sort of go with it. Which
it was
a gold conversation,
props,
I thought.
Yeah. Props to Natalie. We love Natalie.
Absolutely.
Very briefly explain our dear friend, Natalie. She was she was our tour guide for the group. She was with us for all 9 days, turned up at what was it, 9 a.m.,
yep.
left us at probably 9 p.m., you know, greeted us at the airport, said goodbye to us at the airport.
Absolutely amazing.
She was she's a gem. If you're listening, Natalie, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We love you, Natalie.
From the bottom of our hearts. Well, I think that's our time. Thank you so much for coming on today, Seb.
Yeah. That's all right. That was so much fun. Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you so much. You're welcome to come back whenever you like.
Yes.
Absolutely.